You're listening to Irish Radio Candid Home and Abroad, and I'm delighted to be sitting with Adele Murphy, and we are at Your Roots Are Showing, which is a music conference in Belfast. And Adele, how far to Ross?
Glad to be here. It's been a really good conference. It's my first time up here.
Right.
I just really enjoyed the energy about the place and meeting lots of new people and hearing great music and stuff. So I'd definitely be back. I think I really enjoyed myself.
Right, yeah.
I'm trying to look like you because the whole networking thing is not really my vibe, but I think they've come around. I think.
Well, networking is one part of it, I think. The other part is the collaboration.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Actually, there was a great session went on last night. Yeah. We had a showcase on stage two at 7:45, I think it was, and then afterwards hung around because a group of musicians just sat out in the lobby and had a great session. It was brilliant. There was about 10 of them playing.
Yeah, and what you, I think I've been at a number of other conferences, what you find out that is that there's somebody there and they're doing something and you say, oh, it'd be nice to collaborate with them.
Yeah, I heard a couple of tracks like that yesterday as well. People who had met at the conference.
Correct.
And had gone on to do great things.
And otherwise, those synergies might never happen.
Yeah. So you have to put yourself out there.
You have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You do.
In this day and age, you have.
You do. And you can do so much on the phones, you can do so much on social media, but it really doesn't. Playing live for people and meeting people and meeting them face to face and chatting, getting to know them, is still king, I think.
So who's it down there?
Dublin girl, don't hold it against me. I have family in Sligo, my mother's in Sligo, and a lot of my early sort of parents have been in Sligo, so I sit in the car and listen to Bob Dylan and Nancy Griffiths and Johnny Cash and all, you know, the greats, album, and Jeff Wayne's War of the World, you know, which is my introduction to Phil Lynott, he plays with the preacher and Chris Pandem and that as well. So it was a really good musical education. And I've always been a singer, I've always been in choirs, and I've always sort of noodled around with instruments and that kind of thing. I would play piano, guitar, and play. And then I suppose released my first debut album last year, produced by my very good friend Ewan Cowley, who we met when we were touring Celtic Woman in 2013. Ewan was in the band, I was in choir, and we basically discovered similar music tastes and loved these great songs, great singers, songwriters. We used to just get down the back of the bus and play songs together, and really enjoyed that. So when we came off the road a couple of years later, we put out an EP called Blue Bonnet Spring, and we were touring. We had a live show focused on the songs that are written either by women or about women, and it's kind of the celebration of women's struggles, who come through triumphs, and that was called Motherland Songs, and from that then came the concept for my debut album, which is called Motherland Songs, and it's got a collection of some of those really well-loved songs, you know, like Matthew Merchant, great stuff, Parking on there, there's an awful lot of brilliant singers and songwriters, and then there's some originals as well.
Was there any discomfort at home that you weren't getting a real job?
I have.
I know you have.
Certainly. I actually, what I did in college was drama performance.
Okay.
So I had a bachelor's degree in drama performance. And when I told my parents that that's what I wanted to do, I wanted to do something creative, the reassurance from them was, sure, she could always teach. You know. So, and I come from a family civil servants as well. So, you know, they're used to very solid, pensionable jobs.
That should take care of you for life.
Exactly. And then I suppose when I landed the part in Celtic Woman, and then from there I was the soprano soloist from Riverdance. And that's kind of as close as you can get to a sort of solid employment, really.
Yeah.
Because it's consistent and it went on. You know, you just do like 4 month blocks, or you do like a full summer residency with Riverdance, or that kind of thing. So that there was reassurance there. For my own sake, I wasn't bullied by my parents at all into generic employment. I decided to do it myself. You know yourself, it's a difficult life in terms of kind of getting paid.
It is, and from a parent's perspective, I know that. I have two daughters, and they're both in secure, pensionable employment.
Yeah. It's weight off the shoulders, I'm sure.
Oh, huge weight off the shoulders.
Yeah.
And then when you see the grandkids coming up, and you can say, well, what's ahead? And particularly in these times, because of what's ahead. And health industries might be a lot more stable now than an awful lot of office jobs.
I think so. Well, not necessarily the civil service, but this isn't.
No, I didn't know, say
it. But on the private sector, certainly. Yeah. Look, it's great to have. It's nice to have another kind of fallback and stuff. It's obviously not what I want to be doing for the rest of my life, but it allows me to come up here and do things like this, to do the conference, to do the couple of shows around the place, to do the tours. You know, that it fulfills that kind of side of things, which I'm grateful for. It would be nice to, you know, have gainful employment from music, and that's the dream eventually. But it's to do this full time.
And again, the challenges have become an awful lot harder because pre-streaming, you know, you felt there was the opportunity to get compensated for your labour and your art, whereas the level of compensation now is
it's very, very difficult. I'm lucky now that we released the album through Crash Music, who have been a really, really big help to us in terms of navigating that world of the streams and all of those things, like, you know, your royalty payments and stuff like that, because it's a very difficult thing to comprehend.
Yes.
You know, unless you have a bit of guidance.
Oh, very much so, because I can well understand that your ambition is to get your stuff out there.
Yeah, songs on radios.
And once you get it out there, the concept of getting compensated for it probably kicks in secondary, because and at that stage the horse was bolted.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, like I said, I don't want it to sound like I'm only doing the thing because I want to be paid or whatever. That's not the case. But you have to live.
Agreed.
You know?
Agreed. You are fortunate on one level to be in a country where art is recognised by government, and I know they have the programme.
The basic income for the arts programme.
Were you able to apply?
I was able to apply. I didn't get it this time.
Okay.
And once they open it again, I'll certainly be applying again.
Yeah.
But it's something like that, and it's the world first, I believe.
I understand it is.
And just the concept of actually investing in your artists in the country, because Ireland sends artists everywhere, you know, and it's what the land of saints and scholars. It's the first thing you think of when you think of Ireland, are the writers and the musicians and the music. I certainly do,
and even the painters.
And exactly.
Yeah, and you know, the art and craft of the Irish extends beyond what we would, those kind of arts, like architecture.
Yeah. We built New York. You know, not me personally. We built New York, you know.
Well, one thing being construction, but you know, the actual architecture itself, and the innovation that has been around it. The submarine is an Irish concept.
I didn't know
County Clare.
No way.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many things like that that are so innovative that have come from here.
Yeah.
That, you know, we can tend to think of art in terms of painting or singing or something like that. But the creative mind, I guess, is what is so rich here.
Yeah.
So, while you mentioned your influences and those that you would have loved to sing, on the creative side then, you write your own stuff.
I do, yeah. I wrote my single, Careless Hands. Actually, I had written that a long time ago and sort of put away and forgotten about, but it got new life on the album, and it's one I really enjoy. My own writing process, I need to get better at it, and Ewan actually has a really good phrase, which is, inspiration needs to find you working. So while we can all sit around and wait for the song to just land, which is kind of what happened with Careless Hands, it just was there, and you know, I've been chasing that dragon ever since, and nothing else, you know, I write little bits and I'm like, well, that's fine, and then maybe an hour later I'll go, I actually don't like that at all. But it's that process of working at it and working at it and working at it. And then, you know, when inspiration comes, because it's fickle, when it does come, at least then I have a body of things to draw from and go, And it means then that I've developed my craft further on than just kind of going, well, that's all thrown together now, and that's the great song now, and that will do.
Because I know you hear all these stories of people who they got on the bus after a concert, something happened, and by the time they got off the bus a half an hour later, they'd written a song that had become a global hit.
Exactly. Johnny Parker wrote Jolene and I Will Always Love You in the same night. I think it was those two as well. Like, in the same night, just rattled them off.
Yeah.
But Dolly Parton works. You know, like that's the other side of it. It didn't just appear. She'd never not written a song in her life, and then suddenly these two came out of the blue.
And I know at the moment you hear it is a Kingfisher with...
Oh, that's a great song. Killa.
And apparently, again, that just rolled out of them.
It just landed, yeah. Yeah. But it's a terrible thing to chase, you know. It's like chasing that high.
Well, the other song is like My Elusive Dreams, which is what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an awful lot of song concepts. There's one I've been toying around with for a while, and I just can't get it where I need it to be. So I need to put in some actual work and do it badly first.
Yes.
And then hopefully something will be better.
And like in my conversations with artists and writers, some of them, and I always like to ask, you know, how structured are you? Because some will say, well, I get up at 7 o'clock every morning and I have my breakfast and I go down and I go for a run, I come in and 8:30 I sit down at the computer and I start typing and I will type for 2 hours and then I go away and I do something else and like, I'm structured. And I can think, like, if you're a creative mind, that type of structure just doesn't add up. But yet, for some minds, it has to be.
Yeah, it has to be.
Others then will always say, well, I have that notepad at the side of the bed because I wake up bolt upright. I've got three or four words together. Yeah. I have to get them down.
I'm more like that. My notes app on my phone, I have phrases and words and things that I come across and I go, that's a lovely word now. I could write something based on that. Or it could be a photograph. You could take a really nice photo and throw that into the phone and go, there's something in there. But I wouldn't say I'm the most structured person of all. Like, if we had a gig, and you and Malone, I'm sure he's but he needs to be raging at me. I might not have picked up an instrument for about a month, and then a gig is coming up, and I'll absolutely immerse myself in it for like 2 solid days.
Yeah.
And do it all in one go.
And that's also a challenge, because I'm far from a competent musician, but I've now started a Tuesday night guitar session in Ottawa, because it's forcing me at least once a week.
Yeah.
To pick up the instrument and to sit around with others and play different stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas I can sit there for a month
and not do it. Yeah. And there's plenty of opportunities in Dublin to do those things. I used to go to the, I think it was called the Ukulele Ghoulie. It used to be upstairs in the Stag's Head. But my nerves kind of got the better of me. I only went maybe about 3 times. And I did play, but I found myself, I'm much better now, but while I can stand up and sing and chat in front of anybody, I tend to get a little bit of stage fright for playing. I am not sure what it is. I will do it, and you will never know.
Yeah.
But it has been in the past freaked me out a little bit. So my plan is to just make myself do the scary thing, you know. And I was playing in our showcase there, and it didn't faze me. So I know I'm getting over that hump a little bit.
And to that extent, I guess the other thing that, as a non-performer, when you see a performer, they start up and they suddenly realise they're either in the wrong key or the and they just stop and they say, oh, hold on a sec.
Yeah,
we need, and like I know there's one of, I heard some John Prine stuff out there last night, so on one of his ones where he did an intro to the stops and he started up and played 3 or 4 chords and said, oh, okay, that was the longest intro to it, and then I had to start all over again. But
the honesty in that is, and I think it actually, what the audience finds that relatable.
It does. Yeah. The connection with the audience.
Yeah.
And there was one artist I remember many years ago, and she is globally known. I was at the concert, and I felt that her off-the-cuff remarks were too well rehearsed.
Oh, really? I couldn't ever be blamed for it. I do ramble.
And as a result, it came across more as a monologue than a conversation. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, the audience does connect that way.
Yeah.
You know, when writing your own stuff, and again, I like to get feedback on this, is that when you stand up to perform your own work, particularly the first few times, you must feel very vulnerable.
It depends on how recently I've written it, I think.
Okay.
See, with Careless Hands, because it was one I wrote when I was in my 20s. And the first, certainly the first couple of times we performed it, I was like, this is crap. It's that side of things, and it's that real imposter syndrome of I don't think this is good enough.
And that's, you know, when you start the first few cards and the audience was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, and not wanting to, it's like putting your baby out there and saying, it's my baby, yeah. Ugly or beautiful.
Yeah, just accept it, please, you know.
And when you hit the final card and the audience respond, the most
basic. It's just the relief of it.
Yeah.
You know? And to know that it is good, and then, you know, and having the backing of Ewan and the others, and to put it on the album was another final little kind of take and go, yeah, that actually is a good song. Yeah. And it received an awful lot of radio play, so people must like it, so I have to kind of take that evidence and not go, I'm bluffing.
And when you talk radio play, again, there's a lot of, I won't say skepticism, but there's a misperception on one level. And people think the days of radio are over.
I disagree.
I do too.
I disagree. I love the radio.
And to me, radio is very intimate. And, you know, as I think you found out about it, we listen to Late Day because that's our supper time.
Yeah. And I think it's lovely.
And I know, and Cahill is fantastic.
Yeah, he's great.
And
Faith O'Brien. And then
when Ray Cuddy steps in as well. But, you know, there's tremendous electricity there.
Yeah. And you know what I like about radio and live radio is with streaming and with all of these things, there are very few live events anymore that people tune into. A friend of mine used to talk about this when we were in school and something, whatever TV show would be on Sunday, and then everybody would get together in school on Monday and talk about it because that was the only time you could sit and watch it.
Right.
So radio is similar to me. It's happening then. Sure, you can go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that it is live and there are people tuning in from everywhere. There's a sort of community about it. You have to be there listening to it.
There is a community, but as I always found when the microphone was on that I very much felt I was in a one-to-one relationship.
That intimate.
That is, yeah. It's a bit like even when you would get up in front of an audience, you might have a room full of people, but you're actually, it's every pair of ears is individual.
Yeah.
Whereas I find television is passive.
It's so passive. Yeah, definitely. It's happening. You might be in the room.
And how each individual reacts to you, they're kind of their relationship is with you.
Yeah.
Not part of the herd.
They're
in the herd.
The internal world of all of those people is really important. So because I have an acting background, as I said, I did the bachelor in drama performance, and an awful lot of that is thinking about that internal world, which is something I bring to my songwriting, something I bring to my performance. It's not just about getting up and singing it nice and playing the thing and getting all the notes in the right place and that, but there has to be some kind of human connection.
Yeah.
For me, to the song, which is why I love a story song, but also putting that across and seeing it affect people in the audience. And it's always because that's what music is. It's a big connector, you know?
But it's also what differentiates you or identifies you as you.
Yeah.
That you're not just another one of. You're not a me too, or you're just another as a more of.
Mm.
But it's how you identify yourself, which is in the world you work in. You have to identify yourself so individualistically.
Yeah.
In order
which is a difficult thing to do because there is, when I say oversaturation, I don't mean this in a bad way because there is so much good music out there.
Yeah.
Anyone can, you know, undiscovered talent can pick up a guitar, pick up anything, hit record on the phone and put it out there and it could be the best thing ever. So to make yourself stand out, and we have to in this industry to get anywhere and to go to festivals and to tour and have opportunities to play in front of people.
Yes.
You have to differentiate yourself somehow. Yeah. And I think it's that, for me, it's that tie with the acting, bringing that in and telling stories through songs as opposed to just singing them. It's important to me.
So while this is very much a passion and very much a part of your life, you said earlier on, it's not something you see yourself doing for the rest of your life.
Oh, no, this is music.
Oh,
is.
Music is.
Oh, not the civil service, no.
Okay.
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
No, I will always do this.
Okay.
Whether I get the opportunity to make it full-time or not, I do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just, but it's so dramatic, but it is, it's a reason for living, for doing it. Like, it just is.
Well, I can understand that. I can.
I don't know who I would be without it.
Yeah. I can understand that, because again, within a creative soul, if you're not being able to express and be creative, it's...
Then you're just waking up, going to work and coming home and going to bed. What's that? That's terrifying. That's terrifying. I'm going to get fired. I hope none of them listen to this. I have a temporary work. We're all right. Good pensionable job.
Adele, we'll wrap up here. We want to play a track from the album. What do we want to play?
Oh, I think it sounds like waffled on enough pleasure. You might as well give it a spin.
You don't know if you're good. Made a minimum.
Okay, thought you're all.
Well, unprocessed, I think.